Hi, so welcome. This is our first episode of the Design System Office Hours podcast. I'm Davey. I'm a design manager at Dizzy Streaming, managing Dizzy Plus, Stock Plus, and Hulu Design Systems. My co-host is PJ. Hello, PJ.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great.
I guess I should say something a little bit about myself. I'm also a manager. I'm a design manager at Pinterest for the Gestalt Design System. And it sounds like we're going to be talking a lot about managing today, in this episode.
Yeah. And I think, this is a great meeting of the minds here as, PJ sat next to me and in our time together at Dizzy Streaming, but we both have, distinctly the same, unique, title, design manager of design system. So, we're really trying to understand, what that means. So does, in terms of, day-to-day, are we people managers? Are we feature managers? Are we more akin to, say, an engineering manager? And I think between both of our organizations, I think it's really interesting to sort of talk through that. So a little bit just sort of about my backstory. I had started out as a product designer on a feature design team. And as design systems grow, we become a centralized team. So I think as a lot of us have started off in a federated model, I ended up leading a team about 2 years ago with a few platform leads. And just over time, I've went from a senior product designer to a principal product designer and moved into a management role, which I've seen change drastically just from a day-to-day standpoint. And when I worked with you, PJ, you were a principal product designer on our side. So could you tell me a little bit about how that's changed as you've been at the Pinterest Gestalt design system
group? Yeah, sure. So when I went over to Pinterest, I started off as an IC. And it's not a quite glorified story. My manager said, you know what? I don't want to be a manager anymore. You want to be a manager? And I said, sure. And that was the story of me becoming a manager for the team. There wasn't a lot of pomp and circumstance there. It was just the manager on the team, who is now my very good friend, decided it wasn't for him. And I decided to give it a go. And so we high-fived and switched roles on the team. And a lot of the work after that point was trying to shape our place within the company. That was a big part of my role for that first year is now that this is officially a part of my job, other than people management, obviously, it was trying to work with leadership above me to define where our team sits and how we work and how we staff it accordingly.
And then at the time that you made the switch, how many direct reports were you inheriting?
I had four. Four direct reports, and that's fluctuated pretty heavily. Just, you know, given COVID, given so many things, given the shift in work that we did. I now have, if you include contractors, I have 10 direct reports. And I manage two teams at this point, so grown quite a bit, but it's been fun.
Then at Pinterest, how many platforms do you support? So I think when we've historically, you and I talked about platforms, I would say, if I were to answer the question, I would say we support 7 client engineering teams, and the platforms include mobile, web, and, you know, living room connected devices. So how many different distinct platform areas do your team support?
Yeah. So, boy, that's a tough question to answer briefly. We're nothing like y'all. The highest number I can tell you is 3. Realistically, I would argue that we currently support 1, because we have engineering resources for that 1. And so, to be honest, we've directed our full effort towards trying to grow out our web design system to really make the case for, hey, this is how things work, well, healthily. And if we get the engineering resources for mobile, we can do the same thing for iOS and Android. We try to play a support role, provide guidance as much as possible, but where the rubber really hits the road, where we have components built in production code that support our best practices, it's one platform at this point. Very different than y'all, where you support, I think it's 539 platforms to this point.
Yeah, 540 platforms by tomorrow. But I think one of the good, interesting differences between our teams is we, our teams at Dizzy Streaming, don't include a central infrastructure engineering team. So we don't yet have dedicated engineering resources. And, based on like one of your team members presenting at Clarity, we do not have a UI engineer. We are hiring. So if you hear this and you're interested in working with me, we are hiring for UI engineers. We do not yet have project management or program management resources. That's another one. So wanted to really talk about my son is going to be our future program
intern,
Davey program manager. And one of the things that I always saw that was an interesting one when we moved from this individual contributor role to management is how the day-to-day has changed. So in terms of, I think when we were looking at how things were maybe 2 years ago, I was still very much, in the files, I was in the components, I was generating design deliverables, and the role has quickly shifted to planning the design deliverables, shepherding them through design and engineering, gaining, I think there's a big adoption word, gaining adoption. So I wanted to hear a little bit about as your role has changed from IC to manager, how your day-to-day has changed.
I think I've had the typical experience that the day-to-day is not in the work, but in working with the team. The wrinkle for my personal experience is that a large part of the role is product ownership, a real large part of the role. So that's, setting the roadmap, developing OKRs. We're a brand new team, so it was important from my perspective to set up KPIs that we would report up to leadership to show the health and progress of our effort. And so that in and of itself is a full-time job. And then there's the day-to-day management of people. And that involves, the obvious things like team health, personal growth, professional growth, dealing with misalignments, communication, reviews, all those sorts of things. So it's been a decent amount of work. I think ideally, especially for a design system, you would have a full-time product owner and a full-time design manager, and if you have engineers, a full-time engineering manager, ideally.
Yeah, I think that's I 100% agree with that. I think I'm a little bit I would say in a pickle myself, where I serve the role as like team lead, design manager. I'm also a product owner, so whenever we express anything that is part of like the Dizzy design language specifically, we like to express that we are the ones that are shepherding this to engineering. We work with the brand teams, whether they're at Disney, Star, or Hulu, and we evolve your design language and try to bring it to scale. So bring it to something that is, from a taxonomy point of view, maps to whatever the rest of the group's doing. But something like as atomic as buttons or badges may not have product owners historically because it's not a feature. And that's something that the design language and the design system team usually handles. So we're very much in the front lines, bringing that to engineering and trying to, from like a very atomic point of view, bring alignment across all of the applications. But I think it was explained to me by one of my team members, Brian, that I think our role is very much similar to, say, like an engineering manager's role, where we do a lot of like code reviews or, design reviews. We do branch reviews in Figma or Sketch. We do a lot of sitting in office hours and trying to either provide tactical feedback on our own or trying to provide and lend support to our designers that are providing that sort of feedback. So I see a lot of parallels in that case, and I think one of our engineering partners, we had asked them like, oh, you know, like, thank you so much for working on the design tokens with us. And they expressed something that, you know, rings very true to me, is like, it's not because they have to do the work, it's because they get to do the work. And I think it really lends to, I think, where our passion lies. And we try to jump in as managers as we can. But it's a very interesting role. And there hasn't actually been that many product owners by title that I've run into in our space. Maya from REI, I think, is one. So I think in the space that, you know, we've been developing style guides for a while now, I think the product ownership portion, I think, is still evolving. So from that sense, using product owner as the word and using that as a leadership opportunity, how do you see that evolving? And how do you see yourself moving into something that is like a more product ownership, values driven OKR type role?
Yeah, I think it doesn't have to be a product, you know, a full on formal product manager title. I've heard of design leads doing it. I've heard of engineering lead, tech leads doing it. I think that the one challenge is that a lot of the times the skills you need to be a product owner can be pretty divergent from being a successful design lead or a successful tech lead. And a lot of it comes down to just money, like business. What's the return on investment for doing task A versus task B? And so it's not like you can't learn that, but a lot of people aren't interested in that sort of thing. And so you got to have the right person in there that can use that third lever. There's design and engineering and then business to start to make decisions.
Yeah, that's a perfect segue to, I think, from, you know, a design lead, design manager's point of view, like adoption and sort of adherence via, like, I like to say adherence because I think it's a softer, possibly a softer word than governance. I think governance is not too great of a word too. It sort of elicits the, you know, the idea of the WWE's big boss man coming around with a baton or like a yardstick saying like, don't fucking detach this instance. Don't you dare. And we don't really want to elicit that. We don't want to have our office hours and even this podcast to be something that is like, we're forcing you to come to this ceremony and we're going to tell you that no, you cannot create this new type style. But we do want to make sure that we represent the best interests of engineering and what may or may not be accepted. So from a design lead's point of view, would you say you have a pretty good adoption model and like a relationship with engineering and how things may or may not be accepted from like your point of view?
You only ask easy questions, don't you? This is a really tough one. I think that's hyperbolic. I think a lot of design systems teams struggle with adherence or adoption, whatever we want to call it. This is the thing I think about when I wake up. And this is one of the last things I think about before I go to sleep. It will continue to be a challenge. And no matter how it goes, either up or down, it brings new challenges. So if you've got 100% adoption, that sounds awesome. And now you got a whole org that needs help all the time, right? So there's these, you know, derivative challenges that come up based off of how adoption goes. It's one of our KPIs. Well, it's actually two. We have engineering adoption and design adoption. So we are consistently measuring that adoption as much as a heartbeat as we possibly can. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all adoption philosophy. I think it really is based off the culture of the company. And the things that are going to work at Disney streaming ain't going to work at Pinterest and vice versa. So do I think adoption could be better? Absolutely. But I also understand that if that goes up too quickly, we're probably not going to be prepared to deal with that reality and providing the support. And so our goal is more about how do we have a healthy, steady, sustainable adoption growth versus how can we get that number up as quickly as possible? Because that would be a problem, honestly.
Yeah, I think one thing that I'm conscious of is just the office hours model being, we've liked to explain it as a, like a pre-check, like, and you know, when you think about TSA and going to the airport, you know, sometimes it's not a pleasant experience, but if you were to sort of prep for that and you had pre-check, you know, you really are able to get through the line. And I think we've tried to establish office hours that are at a pretty regular cadence. So either weekly, biweekly, the name is always a little bit of a misnomer because most of our office hours are less than an hour. So we could create more repetition and have them in multiple times of the week. But I think one of the mechanisms, to create better adoption that we've just been trying to spin up. And I think we've heard this, you know, term quite a bit in the last year, is like contribution model and how to get designers to contribute back to the system. So and one of the major things that we push is it's not that we don't want you to create something novel. It's we want you to create something and try to repeat it elsewhere and try to improve with the hope of all of these incremental changes, vastly improving the product, you know, over the course of a year. So one good example is like, if you were to try to bring a new button style, maybe try to find multiple other places and touch points where you could, you know, improve this pattern. And it's, I think from that point of view, we've gotten a lot more success from adoption on both sides. But we've been, I would say, you know, struggling a little bit in terms of, the governance side, just coming from being a federated team and newly being centralized only in the last, I would say, year and a half. So I would say, like, as you might remember, I think that we have a lot of designers. I would say a lot of the designers that are familiar with the process are probably, you know, better actors in that sense. But I think that there's continuous education that we need to be doing about the payoffs of, contribution model and reusable components and, you know, just the design system charters in general.
Would you say that education is the biggest challenge or the biggest gap at this point?
I think so. I think education, and then, like, I think a lot of teams understanding that most of us in this space stay at your job for maybe 2 to 3 years, right? What happens in the tail end of that? Do you try to document as much as you can, or does knowledge go away with the platform leads or with the leaders as they go? So I think we've been struggling a little bit with that in waves as people have come and gone. So documentation and education, I think, is a huge lift. And when we say documentation, it doesn't necessarily mean design system reference site. Let's get this thing in zero height and that's going to solve everything. There's a ongoing maintenance and commitment to this. There's meeting designers where they're at. So where might this information lie? Does this educational material live in zero height? Does it live as a training when you start? Or does it live as a training when you first onboard to a new feature team? There's a lot of mobility happening too, with designers going in and out of teams that we promote. But then also, what lives in the tool itself, and where can we meet the designers where they're working and provide tangible documentation and learnings?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing from my perspective is, how do you do that, all that, in a cost-effective way, to where you can sell that and get the resources necessary to continue that? We've been talking a lot about that topic, and the bridge too far for us is repeating documentation. And by that, I mean putting it in one place and then to meet someone where they're at, literally duplicating it over and creating two areas that we need to maintain. And it's not because we don't want to support our teams. It's not because we are lazy. It's because doing that would be unsustainable and eventually it would die on the vine and it would end up being worse than good because it'd be out of date, it would be inaccurate, and then it's leading folks down the wrong road. The needle we're trying to thread right now is how do we provide centralized, institutionalized knowledge that everyone likes to go to? We don't want to create a poor experience, but is also cost effective and sustainable within the team that we have as is. And that's not easy. It's really easy to spin up another thing, right? And then it's really not easy to keep that up to date at a level that meets people's needs.
And then as a design manager of a design system group, as new designers to your product design team, whether they're in whatever business unit they're part of, growth, discovery, whatever you have at Pinterest, how do you work with them? Any, and maybe not you yourself, but how does your team work with them when they newly onboard to bring them up to speed on the latest and greatest of Gestalt design patterns and where to go for what?
Yeah, we have a Gestalt onboarding for every new designer that comes through the door. And we have some great team members that have taken that and run with it. What we're trying to do is build upon that. So, okay, great. We had this onboarding session. You're getting bombarded with information. Realistically, as a human being, 80 to 90% of that information is going to leave your brain really quick. So on top of having onboarding efforts, onboarding sessions, which are expensive from a time investment, how can we institutionalize that in documentation, get it somewhere to where they can refer back to it, and maybe they retain 50% as opposed to 10%. And that's much more cost effective because it's just electrons. It's not a person that has to, prep and run a session for folks. So that's the thing that we're really trying to do is keep it human, but also have resources that are silicon based that are going to be easier on the wallet.
Yeah. One tweet that I read, I don't remember who tweeted this, was, they said, we don't care to listen to your recording of your Zoom meeting. So I don't think it's necessarily recording those onboarding sessions, but I think surely, especially given, our setup, we could do a better job of recording snippets of different pieces of tangible information, because I do think that if you were to be in a spot where you did a 1 or 2 day training while this new person started, they're also trying to understand what is their feature area. Oh, what about all the different things I need to set up, like my VPN and my email and my Slack? So what can we do? One thing I think just over time that has been a struggle too was we do a lot of these sort of large state of the union design system conversations. I'd probably say maybe every 6 months or so, but there's a lot of movement, quarterly, and we don't necessarily have a mechanism as managers and as leads to share out from a newsletter perspective. I think I'm giving away the answer right now. Yeah. We need to create a newsletter, but we don't have a regular cadence where we say this is our releases that we have for the next month. These are the things that we're looking to launch. This is where we need help. And there's a lot of stuff that I think we try to do in an automated fashion, whether you use Slack bots or whether you just spam product design Slack channels. But I think that there's a more targeted way to keep people up to date.
Yeah, I think, you mentioned spam. And I think living in a remote world, I think a lot of people are feeling like they're getting spammed on a daily basis. We used to, in our Slack channel, we used to just post updates as they came. Hey, we did this. Hey, we did this. Hey, 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 hey. And people lost their minds, understandably so. So what we've done instead is we roll that up into a weekly digest where we're real sensitive about when we communicate things out, and have it try to be regular and then archived in a place that you can refer back to it, because Slack is, about as ephemeral as it gets. But just be really judicious about how we communicate, because Lord knows there's a gazillion teams emailing or slacking their progress, and the aggregate of that is just a lot of information to take in. So I would highly suggest something along those lines. It's worked pretty well for us up to this point.
I think we're actually at almost at the 30-minute point here. So this has been a great conversation. I think one of the last bits and pieces that I wanted to touch on is, I think I'll speak a little bit more towards the Disney streaming point of view of design managers. I think there's still a little bit from our organization that there's a split between managers that are feature managers, or maybe even like business unit managers that manage like a large initiative, versus people managers and sort of the role of the manager growing a team of designers. So I see myself a little bit split as well, as specifically in the design system space. I would say I try to focus a lot on the design people management portion, but I do have to make sure that, you know, the train is still running, you know, we're still on rails. So in terms of your day-to-day, how much of that is split between guidance of your own direct reports versus the program?
It's a good question. And I think we have folks that are pretty senior. And so I don't think it would make sense for me to really delve into the day-to-day work all that much. And a lot of, because I am focusing on the product ownership, it is more at that 50,000 foot echelon where a lot of the feedback is more.
Oh, 50,000. You're above,
whatever.
You're five leaps above
arbitrary,
me, man.
Arbitrary, elevation. That's what I meant. Just not ground. Meaning even if I try to provide feedback, it'd probably be useless because I have no idea what I'm talking about at that level. But so a lot of the feedback is more on how does this fit? How does this work connect to this work? Could there be conflicts in terms of this and that? From an architectural level, could this potentially create ripple effects that could affect us else down the road? That's typically where, you know, the feedback comes in. And then like the buzzkill feedback of how does this relate to our OKRs and things that, you know, our roadmap, which is, you know, super fun to hear as an IC. That's typically where my feedback comes in. Every once in a while I'll splash in a little bit of design feedback, but it's not common nowadays.
I guess I did have another question. Like, you know, like I think we could keep this going. My son has some questions about OKRs. In terms of the values, principles, OKRs, whatever sort of framework that you're using to express, you know, a design strategy, how often are you communicating this out to your senior leadership? I would say that just to give you an idea of ours, I think we do a lot of presentation around this time. So we're recording this in the middle of January. We plan for what we think that we're going to be launching. And we have a very good idea from like a business point of view, what launches we're going to hit in terms of in any of our three apps, Disney, Star, Hulu. So we have a pretty good idea that because we support the product design teams, we kind of back our way into a roadmap that supports those deliverables. So it's pretty easy from that point of view, but in terms of additional work, we really try to wrap that around, does this meet our value statements? And is this something that our team is doing? And we have regular touch points on a weekly basis and a monthly basis with our senior leadership. But we've really been trying to figure out the right cadence to showcase this sort of work. Where and how often do you get to review this with your senior leadership in terms of your values and your OKRs?
We have monthly check-ins. That's typically the formal process we go. I think ideally I'd also like to proactively just send an update weekly, so there aren't any surprises come that OKR. My goal is just to avoid surprises, good or bad. Just keep it as boring as possible. But predictability is so important for our team. And given how we've been so heads down trying to really juice as much impact out of this past year, we haven't been able to do that as much as I would have liked. So especially more about what's coming down the pipeline. It's been much more about here's what we've done. But we need to get much better about communicating here's what we're going to do and generally when. That's typically how it works. I typically like the idea of more frequent, less, but more frequent communication, the better. But I still think we have a while to go before we get there. How does that, from your perspective, how does that communication work? How do you know, if you have weekly check-ins, what does that typically look like?
I think it's, I would say our senior staff meetings are very much, I think that it's a readout from our VP of design to us, but then we have, we always have an agenda that is usually teed up the week before. So in the case that I wanted to talk a little bit about the design system values and that sort of thing, I would get on the docket probably like, I would say I try to work very far ahead of time. So I would probably get on the docket a month ahead of time, so I have time to spin up a good presentation on that. And then I would get the floor for usually about 20 or 30 minutes to go through. And we usually would then elicit questions from in the senior staff. It's the VP of design, and then also like all of the senior directors and senior managers. So we usually would get a lot of hand raising in terms of like if I had maybe missed a focus area. So I think one of the things to scale from our point of view is we've been very much in support of the product design team specifically. So product design historically for us has been a lot of the sub experience. We do impact the non-sub experience, but we don't do a lot of stuff in terms of like a marketing or performance marketing and that sort of thing, nor enterprise. So I think those are areas, obviously, that I think that we could align as the same engineering teams build this sort of stuff. So we've really been trying to figure out how we could scale, but it's more of a, I almost like to think of it as like, you know, we're going to war. How many people do we have on our side to help us? So that's how it feels like. And we don't always necessarily have enough people, or the headcount or the right people to take on all of these sorts of roles. So I think that's a little bit of a tricky one. So if we find that we do need to engage with performance marketing, I'll just use that as an example, then we need a marketing like expert, and someone that is on our team that is more versed on that. And if we don't have that, then we need to build the headcount to support that. So I think those are other things from a manager point of view that I think that we're trying to look at and we're trying to review and try to get ahead of before someone just says, we need you to create all of these marketing screens for us. I thought you were the team to do this. You know where everything is. It's like, well, we could help you, but we do need to sort of wrap those tasks back to see if they wrap around our value statements.
Yeah, it's a challenge, right? Like, it's difficult to not be able to meet everyone's needs, and you want to, but you have so many people with so many skills, and you have to make difficult decisions, and then you're trying as most palatably as possible explain why you may not be able to do the thing that's super critical for a team when they need it. And that is a really hard part of the job. And I think, you know, I think a lot of design systems teams are consistently trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents. And you have to be really creative and resourceful for how you get as much done as humanly possible with not enough people. That does not seem to be an odd or uncommon situation for teams. So you just gotta, you know, that's part of the job, right? Is finding smart, clever ways to eke a little bit more out of what the team can do and out of your system.
Cool. Well, thank you. You know, thank you so much for this first episode. Thank you y'all for listening. Hopefully you'll be able to continue and listen, like, and subscribe this. And we hope to, you know, hear from y'all again. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.